thank you for having me in today. I appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, thank you for taking the time. So we can go ahead and get started. I think this is a super interesting topic, so I'm excited to hear you talk about it. I feel like, you know, when people hear about broadband issues when it comes to telehealth, they think about rural. So talk a little bit more about these access challenges that these urban communities experience and how this does disproportionately impact, you know, marginalized communities and can it contribute to increasing health disparities?
When you look at the, like what's driving the need, there are similar areas in both the rural and the urban need, right? Meaning, you know, you have issues with the distance to the doctors. Now, the rural may be, you know, a two, 3 hour drive, but in the urban areas, it might be a 2 hour bus ride. Right. So the distance is not the same in the urban areas, but the time it takes to get there is the same. If I'm working 2 and 3 jobs, which is a lot of the working poor of both the rural and the urban, again, that's a need for telehealth because no one has time to go to the doctors. Right. But when Obama became president and they created this like major stimulus program of which they carved out $7 billion, right? There was a heavy bent on putting that money in rural areas. And as it progressed, as the, you know, our issues with broadband and so forth progressed or regressed, depending on how you look at it, that didn't change. That emphasis on the rural part didn't change. And as a result, people just assumed that the urban area was just fine. There was no problem there, right? There was an AT&T store or a Verizon store at every mall and so forth. So clearly, you know, the urban area is just fine. And that was a problem. And that led to a lot of the disparity. And it is only, I think, because of COVID did it become clear that the pain is very much similar between urban and rural. And they could not make that case, oh, it's just the rural area that we have to worry about. Now, all of a sudden, it's like it was New York City and Chicago and Philadelphia, where they were looking at 50-60% of the students in moderate to low income areas did not have broadband. So they could not, you know, look at that and say, you know, well, we're just going to put those money in the rural area. Now they had to address the urban area.
Right. You know, you touched on a lot of really great things. So for somebody who is new to this topic, you know, can you define broadband redlining and how that relates to current digital inequalities experienced by these historically marginalized communities today?
Sure. Everyone's remembers redlining as it rolled out because of the banks would not lend money to African Americans and people, other people of color. And so it was clearly a racial thing. You might say that the incumbents have become more polished in their redlining, but what you have is if I am a provider of services, cable services, internet services, and so forth, right? I create a formula that says I'm going to target this and that and this area over here. These are going to be, we're going to market our dollar, you know, but that's where we're going to market our services. They may look at where people can get 100 cable channels. When you find people who will pay $300 for a gigabit broadband connection, right? So they establish certain benchmarks that are based primarily on economics and basically who can afford a certain level. And I sat through a presentation once with a representative from AT&T, I believe it was. And they said, they come out and say, you know, we have a formula. And if certain communities don't meet that formula, you know, it's all about the economics. It has nothing to do with race, right? Okay, fine. I'll take that at their word for it. Okay. But the end result is that no one's trying to sell, you know, 2,500 cable channels to the inner city because they know they can't make that money there. They don't repair or upgrade systems, you know, infrastructure for delivering the broadband. There was a wireless ISP that I interviewed for an article, for a story once, and he's in Cleveland. He said, and basically, you know, when you look at where things are, where people get access to certain services, when people have a problem, you know, they have a customer service question, they will get a quicker response. If you have a technical difficulty, you know, if your internet doesn't work, it may be 2-3 days longer to get a response in a, you know, in a poor neighborhood than in a wealthy one. So those are the ways in which both broadband and telehealth are redlined. And it's hard to find. I mean, you have to work at it to find out and then and quantify and then be able to make the case, right? If you just look at that one, Philadelphia, for example, right? When I wrote about their plan to put wireless all over the city, this was 2005, you know, they'd done research in Philly and they could figure out the likelihood of internet penetration, just understanding the economics of a community. Because in the wealthier parts of town, you would have 90-95% internet penetration. But if you went to the poor areas of Philadelphia, you might have 40-50% internet penetration. So it's sort of like a known dirty secret of, you know, the broadband industry. They go where the money is. They will cherry pick to their heart's content. They will give you lots of lip service to helping our fellow mankind, you know, that whole ritual, right? But then they will create these programs like Internet Essentials, which is Comcast program, where they create all these barriers. If you have ever had your service shut off, you can't get Internet Essentials. If you don't have kids, you don't get the essentials, right? It has nothing to do per se with who really has needs. It's like who has needs, but who can survive all of these stupid restrictions and so forth. And this is a problem.
Talk a little bit about, you know, any on the ground efforts to implement efficient broadband networks in urban areas that will serve these marginalized communities. You know, are there innovative community pilot programs that are on your radar that have the potential to increase access to these digital services?
Well, one of the things is I wrote this guide for libraries on how they can develop or how they can implement telehealth services among their facilities. And so getting schools, libraries, churches, barbershops, and so forth, these are different ways in which you can get telehealth and also broadband to low-income areas. You still have to build infrastructure, right? I mean, there are examples where libraries can give patrons a laptop, a Chromebook, and a hotspot, and they'll have that for some period of time, maybe a couple of weeks, might be a couple of months. Those I would put on the category of, you know, stopgap measures, but call it the partnerships that you establish with these different, you know, it could be the nonprofit organizations, like I said, you have the schools, the libraries, and so forth. And each of these can provide a place where you can get either, you know, limited broadband or longer term broadband. I got a note early this morning about Detroit. Detroit has created a program of going neighborhood by neighborhood to build wireless infrastructure and to fund it and so forth. And so it's been a very, you know, it's a tedious process. There are no three things about it, but they work within the economic confines of the community. So if you can only afford 20 bucks a month, they have to figure out, and they have figured out, how to deliver broadband to that audience in an economical way that it gets a job done. There is a nonprofit wireless ISP, right? So they have no profit margin. They have to make the money for operations, but because they take away that profit aspect of it all, they are able to structure deals and to provide infrastructure, if you're using schools and libraries to add to that infrastructure that you're building so that you can make the cost per customer affordable. That's what we're seeing a lot happening in some of the less prosperous parts of town. What you need are people. I think in the case of Detroit, for example, right, the project manager for this neighborhood by neighborhood deployment of broadband is a preacher. So he has a job, you know, obviously, but he is committed to connecting his people. And so you need that. You need, you know, it's like you need the politicians, you know, the local, the city council, and those kinds of things. But you need the unofficial leaders to step up. We're talking about the, you know, the barbershops, the preachers, even the teachers are the ones, you know, that are taking on this role. I would say that every city, every community has different needs. They have different politics, very different economics and so forth. So you have to create something that is specific for the community. So there's no one size that fits all.